Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, hello everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio's SmackDown Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be reviewing this week's SmackDown at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, folks, SmackDown did not have a huge bar to climb over, did they? I was surprised, actually, at the amount of people who thought Raw was decent. There was a fairly, I won't say large, but there was a decent amount of people who thought Raw was pretty good just due to the call-ups. That's the only reason. The call-ups bluffed everybody out. And Raw, technically, was a disaster. It was a disaster booking-wise. It was a disaster call-up-wise. It was a disaster storyline-wise. It was a disaster wrestling-wise. It was just a disaster. So they really had a very, very small hurdle to climb over to beat Raw this week. And for the most part, they succeeded. Again, it didn't take a Herculean effort to do it. But I still have a major problem with NXT guys just running roughshod over the main roster. Because I still say that the message that's being sent here is that NXT is the superior brand out of all three. Now, that's fine. We all may think NXT is a better product than Raw or SmackDown. But the fact remains, they're not supposed to be. NXT may be more competitive because they are hungrier, younger, looking for that big break, willing to take chances. A lot of people are at the same skill level, so the matches are longer and more competitive. But the ultimate goal, I guess, or it was that one day we'll make it to the top. One day we'll enter the WWE as a Raw or SmackDown superstar. And now that has morphed into we are slumming if we go on to Raw or SmackDown because we are superior. We can easily come up to Raw or SmackDown and beat your top guys. We are the number one brand as far as talent. So I don't understand why Raw people aren't trying to go to NXT or SmackDown people aren't trying to go to NXT. Because if that's exactly what you're trying to promote, then here's a thought. Put SmackDown or Raw on the network and put NXT on television. If that's the way you want it to be. I don't care if that's the way you want it to be. But that's the way you're making it. And it's almost like watching a minor league baseball team come up and trounce your major league players. And if you're a fan of a baseball team and your AAA team comes up and just dusts your top players in your normal lineup, what does that say about your lineup? What does that say about your team? Why aren't those players in the majors then? So I really don't like the idea, and they continued it again on SmackDown. The exact same people, once again, dominated WWE's main roster talent. And we are left as fans with the perception that NXT is a superior brand. Once again, we may enjoy NXT more than we enjoyed WWE's Raw or SmackDown. That's fine. I do. I enjoy NXT more than Raw or SmackDown for the most part. But that's like saying I enjoy minor league baseball because they're younger, hungrier people, and we're watching them really strive to achieve something, and they're, you know, very close teams. There isn't any real squash situations there, and it's fun to watch. That's fine. but you're destroying the myth that making it to Raw or SmackDown is the ultimate dream. You're destroying that myth. Because if they can come up here and successfully destroy on their first night top-level talent, then they're actually taking a demotion, aren't they? They're being demoted to be on Raw or SmackDown. Raw or SmackDown stars should be trying to get to NXT. If that's the ultimate goal, if that's where the top talent is. Now, you can argue all you want, but the top NXT talent should fall short to the WWE talent. They can give them a great fight, but they should lose. Because the storyline should be, man, they're almost there. Man, did he come close to beating a top-level name. Man, did he give him way more than he thought he would ever give him. This guy is ready for the big leagues. Just give him another couple of months, and he's ready. He stood toe-to-toe with X, Y, or Z. He came within a hair of defeating this guy. He's ready. That should be the narrative. Not, oh, well, it's a foregone conclusion. Of course these NXT guys can beat up on WWE's Raw and SmackDown roster. Why? That doesn't make any sense. Unless you're trying to send the narrative that NXT has superior athletes who really are the main roster guys. And your guys are not the main roster guys on Raw and SmackDown. Your guys are the secondary guys. And I don't like that narrative. It's not the way it's supposed to be. They don't have as high a name recognition. They don't have as high a recognition factor physically. And it's the wrong move. Period. I don't care how much you like these guys. I'm a big Aleister Black fan. I think Ricochet's great. Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa's great. And if you called any one of them up individually and gave them the respect that they deserved by saying, well, we're going to call Ricochet up, and at first he's going to fight very minor talent. And he's going to beat a few of those guys because they're not really our top guys. They're our lowest-level talent. And eventually he'll work his way into the mid-card. By then you'll be used to him. You'll understand what he does. No. It's not what happens at all. He's in there against Bobby Lashley first night. Aleister Black's in there against top-level competition. Elias, first night. Gargano and Ciampa beat the tag team champions. Champions. The best your federation has to offer. And they beat them. I don't think that's a great message. So it continues on SmackDown, and we start this thing off with Aleister Black versus Andrade Cien Almas. Now, why is this a little bit better? Well, there's two reasons why it's a little bit better. It's a little bit better because these two have a history in NXT. And Almas has not exactly lit the world on fire. He's been hot and cold and back and forth, and he's not really been portrayed as a top-level guy just yet. He's been portrayed as an NXT guy trying to find his way. He's been portrayed as an NXT guy who isn't superior to every single WWE, Raw, or SmackDown athlete. He wins some, he loses some. He's trying to find that groove. He's trying to find that niche. And Aleister Black beats him. Okay, well, it was a long match. It was a decent match. I think the fear, though, is this. If you're a big Aleister Black fan, which would you rather see? Aleister Black have a very competitive match where he almost loses to Elias and he almost loses to Andrade Cien Almas. And he's instantly thrust into that, I'm right in the middle of the pack sort of deal. Or would you rather see him dominate lower level talent for a few weeks where people get that feeling, wow, he's going to be special. Man, did you see that guy take this guy out in 3 minutes? Man, is he going to be special? Because as an Aleister Black fan, I'd rather see that. I'd rather see him dominate a few people. Instead, this is what we get. I mean, at that time, Ty Dillinger had not asked for his release. How come Aleister Black couldn't just simply go over Ty Dillinger in a couple of minutes and look really good doing it? How come he couldn't go over Mojo Rawley in a couple of minutes and look good doing it? How come he couldn't go over one of the Singh brothers and look really good doing it? There are a lot of people there. One of the Ascension and look really good doing it. Instead, they take Almas, which, again, is a better choice than Elias. Because of their history in NXT and because of the fact that this is an NXT guy who's struggling to find his way. He hasn't been promoted as a top-level talent just yet. And if he keeps losing matches at this rate, he never will. The trouble seems to be they give up after about 4 weeks. Here comes Almas. He's going to be great. And to hell with him. Let him lose. No biggie. Here comes EC3. He's going to be... hell with him. We're fed up with him too. That seems to be the way they're going here. They give up way too easy. They're not building these guys up. They're not committing to them. They're not saying, look, here comes EC3. Whether you like him or you don't like him, we are going to make him a very tough guy to beat. He's not losing his first one or two or three or five matches. He's coming in here dominating. No, they don't do it anymore. Don't be shocked if Aleister Black is dropping matches in 3 or 4 weeks if he sticks around. Don't be shocked. When Andrade Cien Almas came out, he didn't drop his first two matches, but right after, then he started dropping matches. EC3's already dropped matches. Lacey Evans has already dropped matches. Heavy Machinery's already dropped matches. A lot of the NXT call-ups drop matches right after 2 or 3 weeks. It's as if they just give up on them. So all in all, Mike, I mean, I think the Almas match was a better choice. But once again, I just don't think it allowed Aleister Black to feel dominant in any way or look dominant in any way. He looked like a guy who could win or could lose against a talent like Almas. So it kind of makes him feel like he's not that special, as opposed to if he dominated 2 or 3 matches against lower level talent, we'd get a different feel about him.
You're right. And look, here's the deal. This isn't the first time they've done this thing with these guys. Remember what happened with Kevin Owens?
Yeah. First night up.
First night out. And then within a month and a half, what is he doing? What was he doing?
Yeah, exactly. Dropping matches.
So, yeah. Now, granted, you're right. I like the match, you know, and this would have been a fine thing. You know, if he'd been around here for a while, you know, if he'd come up and be around here for a while, that would have been a fine match to have at a After a while, after Aleister Black's been around here for a while, and then both he and Almas are doing well, then you bring that match back up again, and you can have a long program with these two guys.
Yeah, listen, that's an excellent point, and you hit the nail right on the head. That is exactly my point, and that is exactly correct. After Aleister Black had taken care of maybe a Ty Dillinger, maybe one of the guys in the Ascension, maybe a lower level guy, you announce on one of the pay-per-views, whether it's going to be a pre-show match or a middle of the card match, he's going to face his toughest competition in Almas. Then you have that match. And then Aleister Black feels special. Because then you get, well, he got by a tough guy. And hey, Almas is pretty good. He almost beat a guy who's, you know, really been running roughshod here. So this was, you know, special. Both guys get help that way. Aleister Black is not helped by this victory. Because he didn't look dominant in the victory. He looked like, well, I'm lucky to win. Almas has not helped in this loss because he looks like, well, you can't be the guy who just come up from NXT yesterday. So it doesn't help either side. What Mike just described helps both. Black gets a huge push with lower-level talent. There's a build-up for his match against Almas. They have a very competitive match, and you're left saying, man, that Aleister Black is the real deal. He beat Almas, and you also leave saying, man, say what you want about Almas. He almost beat him, and then that guy's been dominant. So both guys get helped. So, Todd, it was kind of more of the same thing. I do think it was better to put him against Almas, but again, I'm not a big fan of NXT guys instantaneously going over mid to higher level talent.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it's kind of good and it's kind of bad in a way. I remember back in the day, you had somebody to come up, like into the WWE. They started off like smaller, lower talent guys are not that great, and like jobbers back in the day, and you work your way up like to mid-card or upper mid-card,
right?
Sort of main event status into a big main event status.
Right, those days are gone. You know, I was just watching some old WWE, and I noticed something about them, what they would do. They'd bring a guy in, and he'd dominate. He'd beat two or three guys pretty handily. And then he'd go against, like, a pretty big name, and you'd be like, oh, that's a pretty big name. I don't know if he's getting by him. And he'd get by him in a weird way, like that guy's current feud would come down to ringside, and he'd jump out, and they'd fight on the outside, and that guy would win by count out. And you'd be like, well, he didn't really beat him, but he didn't lose. And that's how you'd keep that guy kind of strong for a while until you were ready to have him suffer his first loss. In the wrestling business now, wins and losses, they don't matter. And so why are fans invested in who wins and loses? It doesn't matter. If wins and lose and losses matter, Andrade Cien Almas is fucked. But next week they'll tell you, oh, he's in the title picture. If wins and losses matter, how come Jeff Hardy's in the Elimination Chamber? If wins and losses matter, how the hell does R-Truth get a title shot? Wins and losses don't matter in the WWE. And if they don't matter to the WWE, how the hell are they supposed to matter to the fans? So we then get a little backstage segment with Cesaro and Sheamus and Gargano and Ciampa. And here's why I hate this. And I don't mean I dislike it. I mean I hate it. If you're a fan of NXT, this storyline makes no sense. Gargano was in the ring a couple of weeks ago saying, I am not friends with Tommaso Ciampa, and we are not a tag team. We're mortal enemies, and that's the way we're going to stay. Oh, well, I don't know. You're playing your faces over here. So how are we supposed to believe that you guys are still doing that storyline in NXT where a couple of times you're on the same page, on the same team, reluctantly, but you still don't like each other, and there's still a lot of tension there, and you're still two very mean, nasty guys. And then over here, you're smiling babyface guys who like each other and holding each other's hands up. We won. That is really not good. That's really not good. I mean, that is basically just like saying, well, we know you don't watch NXT, so it really doesn't matter. That's awful. And then there we go again. It was a good match, and it was a very competitive match. And to their credit, Gargano and Ciampa sold Sheamus and Cesaro as if we're very, very fortunate that we won this match. But they still won. And I don't even know why they're teaming. They're the North American champion. It doesn't even make any sense for them to be here teaming. So I can't get by that. I cannot get by it. It would be like Samoa Joe and AJ Styles are in the Elimination Chamber together and may have to work together. And then they go over to NXT and they're buddies, holding each other's arms up. We won. Yay, Samoa Joe. Give me a hug. It doesn't make any sense. And it makes them guys look stupid. So once again, I'm a good match, Mike, but I'm not a fan of this storyline because it makes no sense.
Yeah, it makes no sense, and that's the deal. And the thing is again, these two guys are on their way to being perfect heel, almost perfect heels down in the NXT. You know, I mean, I think Ciampa is there, and Gargano is close. You know, I mean, it was a good idea for them to turn Gargano and to come up here and make them baby faces. Doesn't make sense. I mean, I watch NXT. I watch NXT and I watch the NXT UK. You know, it's like, why would you bring the Coffee Brothers in as faces when they're heels over there, you know?
Exactly. It doesn't make – if you tuned into NXT after watching this for the first time, you'd be confused. You'd be like, "What? Wait a minute. I thought they were buddies. What's going on? I thought they were good guys. What's this?" I don't like it. I just don't like this angle at all. This is not the way to bring in Ciampa or Gargano. Now, if you want to tell me they're leaving NXT and they're losing their titles and they're going to come in as strictly a tag team, okay, well then wrap up those loose angles in NXT, get them back together and get them over here. Heel or face, I don't care. But just wrap up the loose angles in NXT and get them over here. That's fine. As a matter of fact, it's probably really good because neither one of those guys are very big. And as a tag team, they look like, well, we can overcompensate for that by tag team moves and being really, really fluent in our the way we work together as a team. Individually, it would be a little bit harder. So I'm all for that, but that's not what they're going to do. From what I hear, NXT guys are going to work all three brands. That makes sense. And it would not surprise me if next time we see them, they're on the losing end. Because the WWE always likes to play the 50-50, and they'll say, well, you know, maybe people are right. Maybe they look too dominant. Just have them drop. Have them drop, no big deal. And then there you go. So again, Todd, listen, you're an NXT watcher. It doesn't make a ton of sense that they're up here as faces.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it doesn't make any sense to have you're on NXT, your heels, on Raw and SmackDown, your faces. It's a mixed-up situation here.
And even if you said, okay, well, that's the way they're going to be, heels one place and faces the other, but they don't like each other. They're not supposed to really like each other. So I don't know. Anyway, we then get Asuka coming out, and, Asuka's promos, You can't do it. You just cannot do it anymore. At the risk of sounding whatever, Asuka just screams into the microphone, bugs her eyes out like she just saw Godzilla step on Tokyo, and then that's it. It's awful. She can't do it. God bless her. I mean, you know, there's a language barrier there, and she can't do it. I don't know why you keep giving her the mic. She can't do it. You'd think you'd have learned your lesson. And out comes Mandy Rose. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I guess this is the way they're going to build Asuka back up. She'd, you know, go through a couple of girls on her way to somebody for WrestleMania. Wrong. Mandy Rose wins. And this, in my opinion, is the classic example of lazy booking. We have nothing for Asuka, and nobody looks like a contender that's worthy to beat her. We have not built up anyone else strong enough to look like they are a contender for Asuka's title. So waltz somebody's ass out there in a non-title match and let them pin her, and then the next thing we'll do is say that's a title match for Fastlane, and that's exactly what they did. They wouldn't have done that with Ronda Rousey, though. They wouldn't have had Ronda Rousey get rolled up by Ruby Riott before her match at Elimination Chamber. No, 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 no. No, 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 no. So what are we, you know, does anybody think Mandy Rose is a serious contender? No. Of course not. This is called, we just need an opponent for the next pay-per-view, and we don't have one. We kept Asuka off Elimination Chamber. We sure as hell can't keep her off of Fastlane. She's the champion. Who do we got back there that would look like a serious threat? Nobody. Okay, well, we're promoting Mandy Rose as a tag team, but get her out there anyway and let her pin her in a non-title match by some trickery, and fans will say, if she could do that again, she's the champion, and they'll believe that Mandy Rose could beat Asuka. Yeah, okay. That's what's called extraordinarily lazy booking, Mike.
It is, especially when you've got an ex-champion in Naomi there, you know?
Yep.
A girl
and Carmella.
A champion. And Carmella. I mean, you could have worked a possible three-way thing with those three ladies. I mean, like you say, it's lazy booking. I like Mandy Rose. She's good in the ring. She's good on the mic. But she's not ready as a singles person. Again, she's been in a tag team. So I mean, what can you say?
Not too much. And now, I don't know why they're not using Naomi. Some people are saying that the Usos are on their way out the door and Naomi's going to follow them. I don't know that to be true. As far as the Carmella thing, once again, I don't want to get into personal lives of wrestlers, but the deal with Corey Graves' wife tweeting about an affair, it got ugly, folks. And the WWE don't like ugly. It got real ugly. It got ugly enough that she basically posted that her daughter's, Corey Graves' wife posted that one of her daughter's heroes is Carmella. And Carmella had made a special birthday greeting for her daughter or something. And she's like, it's really nice to know that my daughter's idol is sleeping with her father. And Corey Graves posted, if you don't take that down, the WWE is going to sue you. He said, you, not us, which is not a good thing. Really, he should have said us. Eventually, she took it down. But the WWE does not like this type of drama, I'm telling you. Even though we've seen it with Edge and Lita, and even though we've seen it with a few other people, the WWE does not like this type of drama when it gets out. And it sheds a negative light. And there's a million people on Twitter calling people every name in the book. They don't like it. So maybe they're going to lowbrow Carmella for a while. Maybe they'll even, I don't know what they'll do because he announces for both brands. I know he's fallen out of favor recently with WWE and WWE fans. So maybe that's why. I don't know. But this is just lazy booking. You could have had anybody, insert female wrestler, walk to the ring, claim you're ready for Asuka, fake an injury, roll her up for a three count, you're her next opponent at a pay-per-view just so we can get to a pay-per-view, and then you'll lose. It's insert generic wrestler. Mandy Rose is the generic wrestler. That's awful. That's awful booking. No excuse for it whatsoever. You should have had somebody waiting in the wings who's a top series contender for Asuka. Why don't you? By the way, conspicuous in their absence again this week is the U.S. champion. Also, Rusev and also Shinsuke Nakamura, who apparently also will have nothing to do at Fastlane. I'm surprised they'll have anything to do at WrestleMania. I'm sorry, but when you got Shinsuke Nakamura and a guy who was so over, you were selling calendars where every day said Rusev Day. And you got to worry about bringing up Gargano and Ciampa and totally ruining their shtick in NXT because you're afraid of losing ratings. You don't know how to handle wrestlers. You don't know how to work them no more. You don't know how to get the most out of them anymore. You're taking one squeeze of the orange and throwing the goddamn orange away. There's so much more you could do with Shinsuke Nakamura. So much more you could do with Rusev. And even with R-Truth in this triangle of the U.S. title. And by the way, yes, I did mention Ty Dillinger, so let me say Ty Dillinger asked for his release. I don't know whether it will be granted or not, but Ty Dillinger asked for his release. I don't blame him. He's 38 years old. He's going absolutely nowhere in the WWE. And if he's ever going to do anything, they would be the next few years. So, you know, he's running out of time here. So he probably figures, let me go do this before I end up 45 and still nobody's seen me on SmackDown. Shame. It's a pretty good talent. They never really knew how to book them correctly, which is inexcusable considering, you know, you're the ones who called them up. That's the thing that gets me. Oh, we don't know what to do with them. Then why'd you call them up? If you don't have a plan for a guy, what in the hell are you doing calling them up to begin with? How does that make any sense? It doesn't. All right, let's go to Ricochet versus Eric Young, because this was better. Now, I'm not a big fan of the entire Sanity being at ringside, because then that just makes them look goofy. They all got beat up by Ricochet, all of them. But Eric Young, if they had banned the other guys from ringside, ideally what should have happened is Ricochet's losing, thanks to Sanity at ringside, and the referee said, both you guys got to go. And then Ricochet beats Eric Young. Eric Young and Sanity are going nowhere. We already know that. So for Eric Young to drop a match against Ricochet, that's fine. That's fine. You've mishandled Sanity to the point where you're probably not going to be able to bring them back. So if you want to use Eric Young as a warm-up guy, as a build-up guy, as a carpenter, fine. I have no problem at all with Ricochet beating Eric Young, because Eric Young was never promoted to be anything but a very low-level worker on SmackDown. Now, if he'd beaten Shinsuke Nakamura, I have a problem with that. Not if he eventually beats him, but if he beat him now, I have a problem with that. Because then you're not building up Ricochet. You've already he literally went from nobody to highest he can go in one night. So what's the point? Aren't you trying to use them to get the most out of them you can? Step by step, WWE. Step by step. So I do think this is more like a first step. I'd have rather seen him do this than be in the ring against Lashley. So he beats Eric Young. It was a slightly competitive match, but only because of Sanity on the outside. Otherwise, it was pretty much Ricochet dominating. Again, as much as I like Eric Young and Sanity, and I think they've been horribly misused, I don't really have a problem with this because the booking for them has been so abysmal. If you're using them as warm-up guys, that's fine. If you're using them as enhancement talent, fine. So this one probably the best out of the three, Mike, as far as the way they used them.
Right, and that's the thing. And look, we've said it before with Sanity. I don't want to see her there, but Nikki Cross should be with them. But that's neither here nor there. Yeah, that's how they should. What she exactly said is exactly how they should be using Sanity, but they're not. And frankly, I'm surprised all three of those guys haven't asked for their release yet.
It's coming. I just have that feeling. It's probably coming. I don't know about Eric Young because he's getting a little older now, but the other two guys, I mean, God have mercy. So anyway, Todd, a better use of Ricochet than they did on Raw, in my opinion. Fans got to see Eric Young, which is good. He beat him fairly easily, which is fine. And that's why, if you'll note, the crowd was a little bit better this on SmackDown than they were on Raw, because they were the NXT call-ups were used slightly better, especially in this instance.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I agree with you on with them being at ringside, not supposed to be there, but in a way, it's like that match is like a little better than the first two matches we saw on SmackDown. Aleister Black and the DIY matches, and it was more lively than from the crowd reactions than the first two matches we saw.
Because they got to see Ricochet feature his stuff. It wasn't a tag team match with another guy, a major name in Finn Balor. It wasn't a ridiculous Davey and Goliath thing where, you know, you cannot have Bobby Lashley. I'm sorry. You can't have Bobby Lashley oversell to Ricochet. The narrative there should be, can he beat him? Yeah, one time out of eight. You know, if he runs him ragged and his tongue's hitting the ground and he keeps low and he does all his flying moves and things, but God forbid if he catches him. But what I hate is, no, he caught him. He gives him all of his power moves and that's still not enough to finish him off. Why? Why wouldn't it be? If it's enough to finish off a guy twice his size, how come it's not enough to finish him off? Because he's Superman. That's dumb. I don't like that. If you're going to book those matches, then you got to book the matches that the guy just doesn't really get hit with the major moves. He doesn't really get caught in the clutches of the bigger guy for a very long period of time. Otherwise, it becomes ridiculous. So, we are then left with a match that no one really said it was going to determine who the number one contender was for Fastlane. What they said was one of these six men will most likely be chosen. And we assumed it's based on maybe what team wins or who gets the pinfall or whatever. We didn't really know. All we knew is there's going to be an announcement about Daniel Bryan and who his opponent will be at Fastlane. And it may or may not be based on this match, but it probably is. Daniel Bryan comes out and says it's not going to be any one of these people because I beat them all in the Elimination Chamber. And I literally beat them all because I was the first guy in the Elimination Chamber. So I beat them all. So why should I have to fight them again? Once again, Jeff Hardy's in the match. So you're telling me. See, this is what bothers me. Jeff Hardy's one of the top five guys then. That's basically what you're saying. One of the top five guys in our federation. He's right in the title hunt. Right next to Randy Orton. Right next to AJ Styles. Right next to Samoa Joe. There's Jeff Hardy. But Shinsuke Nakamura's not. Rusev's not. And I got news for you. If Aleister Black can pin Andrade Cien Almas, how come he's not in there? Because he's an upstart. Well, he's an upstart who just beat your top guys. And Jeff Hardy's in there. He's beat nobody. Samoa Joe's there. He's beat nobody. Kofi Kingston's there. He's the tag team guy who's just recently caught fire because he put on a really great performance in a gauntlet match. And subsequently in the Elimination Chamber. So I don't think it was a mystery who was going to get chosen. They know there's going to be a good match between those two. They know they don't want, you know, I had almost thought maybe they'll try to stretch this out and really give Kofi something at WrestleMania. But then I came back to my senses and said, nah, WWE's not going to do that. Kofi's not high profile enough. They're going to use Kofi, and probably in a really good way. They're going to use Kofi as the guy the fans are all rooting for. But once again, Daniel Bryan does something and wins. And they're so mad at Daniel Bryan that they're going to root for whoever his opponent is at WrestleMania. That's probably pretty smart, actually. That's a little bit of old school booking right there. So the match itself, this is not the way you want to use AJ Styles. It's not even really the way you want to use Samoa Joe. Jeff Hardy, maybe. Randy Orton, maybe, but not really. So I wasn't really overly thrilled with it, but hey, it is what it is. Kofi gets picked. Kofi's going to Fastlane to fight Daniel Bryan. Well, I'm not going to say this was an awesome show. It had some better matches, but it always does. SmackDown always has the better matches. I still think they misused a little of the NXT talent, especially Ciampa and Gargano, whose storyline makes no sense and does not run at all parallel to their NXT storyline. It actually hurts it. Again, I think Mike hit the nail on the head when he said this should have been Aleister Black's first major feud and not a warm-up match for somebody else. And I think they did okay with Ricochet. I think they made a pretty good choice with that. As far as the Mandy Rose thing, extraordinarily lazy booking. Extraordinarily lazy. When you have to look around your locker room and say, who can we put Asuka against for Fastlane? And you literally say, we don't know. That's because you have built no one else up there. And there is no excuse for it in the world. None. Laziness. Lack of caring. So, I mean, I'm glad Mandy Rose gets her opportunity. It's going to highlight her. It's not going to do anything for Asuka because she's expected to win. If you can't get by Mandy Rose, then I don't know what to tell you. Then you're not the Asuka that everybody remembers, are you? And they're going to have Asuka go into WrestleMania the champion. I'm pretty damn sure of it. Who she's going to fight, I have no idea. None whatsoever. Because once again, you haven't built anyone up, and you really don't have the time now, do you? So now you have to resort to that lazy booking instead of saying, well, we had this person on the burner. We knew what was going to happen with Asuka. You know, we were monitoring this, and we're heading up to WrestleMania. My assumption is, if you don't want to do backward writing, if you don't want to write like next year's WrestleMania right after this year's, at least at the six-month period, you should be thinking about it. At least at the six-month period, you should be saying, look, this is ideally what we would like. If people stay healthy, if the characters stay strong and the fans still react to them, this is our plans. We're going to have a plan B in case they get injured, or the fans don't react the way we think, or we just don't have any faith in that person, or something horrible happens where, you know, they've disgraced themselves in the Federation, we got to boot them. But all things being equal, this is what we hope for. And then you work toward that. But you always have that plan B in the back. They don't even have a plan A. That's the thing that bothers me. To hell with plan B. They don't have plan A. Right now, I promise you, they don't know who's fighting Asuka at WrestleMania. They don't know. They don't know what the hell they're going to do. They'll probably stick her in a three-way match with Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose and her. And then the big question mark will be, will Sonya and Mandy turn on each other for the belt or something like that? Just laziness. So, listen, all in all, was it better than Raw? Yeah, but, I mean, it doesn't have to do much to be better than Raw. It's still a below-average show. Wrestling-wise, it wasn't below-average, but storyline-wise, it was. Lazy booking, overhyping NXT guys way too soon. Way too soon. And at the expense of guys that, I mean, if you let Almas run for a little while, he's just barely gotten here and he's dropping matches. How do we know that's not going to be Aleister Black in 2 months like is Almas? How do we know that all of a sudden you're not going to call up, you know, whoever, Velveteen Dream, and no problem, in 8 minutes he beats Aleister Black, and Aleister Black's a 50-50 guy who comes out and loses some and wins some. How do we know that? Based on your past history, we have no assurance you're not going to do that to Aleister Black, or you're not going to do that to Ricochet. You've done it to EC3. You've done it to Andrade Cien Almas. Why wouldn't you do it to Aleister Black? Why wouldn't you do it to Ricochet? I have no faith that you won't. So we'll see. I mean, I haven't gotten too hyped over SmackDown. I know I talked to Mike during it, and we were both in agreement that it was better. It didn't take much to be better. I mean, the opening segment was better. If they'd ended it right after the opening segment, it's still better than Raw. But was it magnificent? No, it wasn't. It was filled with inconsistencies and lazy booking and just weirdness, and they've left people out that really should not be left out. I mean, it's been weeks. R-Truth won the belt. We haven't seen him since. Nor Rusev, nor Nakamura. Where the hell are these people? And then you made the cardinal sin unless I missed it. Because there was one point I went out to get myself a snack and I might have missed it. But I believe that you didn't run another Mojo Rawley segment. And if you're going to promote a guy with video vignettes, they have to be every week. Because then otherwise we forget about him as fans. Otherwise we're just like, oh yeah, that, you know. You can't pick it up after 2 or 3 weeks. They didn't do that with Razor Ramon. They didn't do that with Val Venus. They didn't do that with The Undertaker. They didn't do it with any other people. Not The Undertaker, because he showed up surprisingly. But they didn't do it with any of the major people. Every week you got a new vignette until that person arrived. I didn't see a Mojo Rawley one this week, Mike. Did you?
Didn't see it. Did not see it. And that's the thing. And look, if everything was even, we know what they're doing with Becky and Charlotte. All right, we know what's happening there. If everything was even and there wasn't any controversy with Carmella, or there wasn't any questions surrounding the Usos with Naomi, one of those two girls would be, because they have that pedigree of having held the championship already, one of those two girls would be in a match with, in a feud or in a match with Asuka. Because they have the pedigree, if everything was even, you know?
Yeah. Well, what I thought, I'll tell you the truth, I thought an NXT girl was going to be called up. I thought we were going to see an NXT girl show up and challenge Asuka. A fresh face. But we didn't. There is a little bit of news to talk about before we go off the air and we give our ratings on this. And one is a head scratcher, and the other is really good news. So let me give you the really good news. The really good news is Monday night, Roman Reigns is making his return to Raw. You know, he's not going to wrestle, but he's going to give an update on his battle with leukemia. Apparently, it's going very, very well. And while I don't think you'll see him wrestle at WrestleMania, he'll probably be there in some capacity. And it's just going to be really good, and I hope it goes well. And I'm already getting, like, some people saying to me, oh, man, he's back already. Did they fake this? No, come on, dude. They didn't fake this. He's not back. He's not ready to wrestle. But it's just good that, listen, I got to tell you the truth. If I was fighting something like this, I don't know if I'm, you know, I don't know if I want to make a public appearance and be like, well, here's my update. Even if it's good news, you know, and it's like, all right, I don't want to jinx myself, or all right, I don't want to come out here and that's somewhat of my personal life. I don't know, so I give him credit. I give him credit. If wrestling wasn't in his blood, if he didn't love what he was doing, I promise you, he's not coming out there to give an update on his health and talk to the fans. He's just not. So for all the Roman Reigns haters out there, at least acknowledge one thing. He must love the business. And that's a hell of a lot more than you can say about some who've made it a long way. And the second piece of news, which is a head-scratcher, is that the WWE reportedly is extraordinarily high on Lacey Evans. I mean to the point of saying she is going to be promoted as one of the top 3 or 4 women in the division. And I just don't know what to say about that. I watched her in the Rumble. She was awkward. I don't think her gimmick is really going over very well. I wasn't impressed with her mic skills terribly. And I don't know. How does that work? You're pushing her to the top right there next to Becky and Charlotte. And you know what they're saying is Ronda's going to take a little time off after the pay-per-view, after WrestleMania, which is Backlash, and they're going to need that third top girl. Well, you've got the third top girl, don't you? You got Asuka, hopefully. So you'll have Asuka, you'll have Charlotte, you'll have Becky Lynch, and they want, I guess, one more, and they've chosen Lacey Evans. So expect to see her in the ring really soon and expect her to be successful, because apparently they're very high on her. Ember Moon, I guess they're not high on. You know, there's another NXT, you know, you get NXT and the next thing you know, you're losing matches. So for all of you people who are getting on my case about, oh, Aleister Black coming up rules, didn't you call for Aleister Black to come up? Yes, I did. But in this current environment, I'm very nervous about these call-ups, because I know what's going to happen to them after a month or so. They're going to be dropping matches, and you're all going to be bitching, oh, Jesus Christ. Did you see Aleister Black lose like a dog to this guy or that guy? Yeah. Did you see Ricochet get his ass beat? Yeah. God damn it. Well, what do you think was going to happen? Haven't you been paying attention? What NXT guy has come up and just dominated? You know, they make these guys dominate for 2 or 3 weeks, and then they put them in the middle of the pack. Apollo Crews was a call-up. Where the freak is he? Almas is in the middle of the pack. How long did it take Finn Balor? He came up and dropped and won a little and dropped and won a little and dropped and won a little, and they didn't know what the hell to do with him in the middle of the pack. Bobby Roode, where the hell? Middle of the pack. Gave him a little bit of a shot for a while, and then, boop, straight downhill. The Ascension, a little bit, boop, straight downhill. So what makes you in your wildest dreams think that Aleister Black or Ricochet or even Gargano and Ciampa is going to be any different? I'm getting to the point where if I like a guy in NXT, I guess I want him to stay there. I don't want him on the main roster, because the main roster seems to be poison. A, they don't let them do everything they're going to do. B, they usually mishandle them. At least if they stay where they are, we're going to get to enjoy them to their fullest extent. So it's gotten to the point where, you know, everybody's saying, Velveteen Dream, no, leave him right where he is. I'll enjoy him right where he is. Hey, where's Drew McIntyre? He had to leave NXT, do a whole bunch of, I don't know, circling the globe, proving himself, comes up, he's a world beater for 3 weeks, and then he's dropping matches. So I don't want this to be Aleister Black's fate. I don't want this to be Ricochet's fate. I don't want this to be Tommaso Ciampa and Gargano's fate. I'd rather see them right where they are. We'll enjoy them for what they are. It's almost the mirror image of ECW. When the ECW guys came in, you already knew they weren't going to use them, right? They're not going to make them the guys they were. And what did they do? They destroyed Raven. They destroyed the Sandman. To some extent, they destroyed Tommy Dreamer. They did a little better with Van Damme because he was a little more their style and the way they liked. But for the most part, Taz, they destroyed Taz. They destroyed everything that we liked about them because they wanted them to be what they want. And I fear that's what this is going to be. So I don't have a lot of hope, Mike, that we're going to see the best of any of these guys in the main roster.
Right. Even to some extent, the Dudley Boys, you know. I mean, what were the Dudley Boys when they were in ECW, you know? And then they changed them. They changed them big. Now, they won a bunch of titles in the WWE, but they changed them. Yeah. I want them to stay down there. I mean, What's happened to Nikki Cross? You know?
Exactly.
You know, yep. And that's thing.
And all of Sanity, let's face it. What's happened to them? If you're really a fan of these people, Todd, I think you probably would rather just watch them in NXT, no?
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, if they're not going to make it on the main roster, get treated like crap at being handcuffed, maybe they should stay on NXT, though. They're better off on that brand and show what they could do on air.
Yeah, look, if Triple H is trying to promote NXT as its own brand, it's no longer the training ground, it's no longer the minor leagues, then leave them where they are. If it's no longer any of those things, then leave them exactly where they are, where they can be best utilized. Okay? it's the equivalent of saying we have a guitar player who can play heavy metal leads like you can't believe. He can shred an electric guitar. And you know, right now he's in an indie band and they're pretty successful, but he's going to leave that band and join friggin' Fleetwood Mac, where you're going to do fuck all on the guitar. Well, what's the point? Then you're never going to get to see him do what you want to see him do. So I just don't understand. If you're a fan of NXT, I would really think you'd want the guys to stay where they are. Right now, I get a lump in my throat when people are being called up because I'm like, oh, hell. That's the last really good thing we're going to see of them guys. And never should be that way. If that's your own brand, keep it. Don't mix them with WWE. Mix them with 205 Live if that's what you want to do. That's a better fit. I would love to see NXT invades 205 Live. Man, I would love to see that. But not on the main roster, because we know how that works, and it doesn't work well. So all in all, is this show better than Raw? Yeah, it was. It kept my interest. The matches kept my interest. Some of the things pissed me off. Some of the exclusions of talent that I really thought should have been shown, at least for a minute. But I'll give it a C, which is considerably better than the F- that I gave Raw. The good parts of SmackDown, they utilized Ricochet better by putting him against a guy who we could argue should have a much bigger role in the company, but he doesn't. So as long as he doesn't, at least it wasn't like Ricochet beat Shinsuke Nakamura or Rusev, he beat Eric Young. And that's the correct thing to do. You beat a lower level guy first. The feature match was a decent match. It had all your, you know, most of your main talent in it, and the fans are really high on Kofi, so that worked out okay. Daniel Bryan cut a pretty good promo. The Andrade Cien Almas match with Aleister Black was way better than the one with Elias. I didn't care for it. I think Mike hit the nail on the head again when he said that should have been the first feud in a pay-per-view. But for what it was, it was okay. The Mandy Rose thing, I think it's a disaster, a sloppy booking. The Gargano thing with Ciampa and them being friends and all that, I just don't understand that, and I'm not buying it, and I don't like it. So that's what prevented it from being higher. So I'm going to give it a flat C, Mike. How about you?
I'm going to give it a flat C as well. And look, go back and you look at what they did on that next night on with Ciampa and Gargano on NXT. Yeah, they showed up, you know, before their, you know, backstage, but it was basically back to their antagonism toward an antagonism toward each. Yeah, he goes, I'll be with you, but and then Gargano goes, well, I don't need you because I can do it myself. So that type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bizarre. I mean, I don't know where that's coming from. Todd, what's your rating overall?
Flat C.
So there we go, folks. I mean, it was better than Raw. It was a flat C. It was it had its moments, but we're suffering from. How would you like to be Shinsuke Nakamura or Rusev or any of these other people? This is why Ty Dillinger asked for his release. When all these new NXT guys are coming up, the writing's on the wall if you're Ty Dillinger. Why would you call more people up when you got people sitting on the bench saying you haven't seen me in I don't know how long and you're not using me and yet you're calling more people up? So if you're Rusev, you're Nakamura, you're any of these other guys sitting on the bench, you got to be thinking to yourself, they're calling more guys up when they're not even using me. You know what that's the equivalent of? That's the equivalent of some guy with a part-time job. And then you find out, we just hired three more guys full-time. And you're still part-time, and you're like, well, how much do you think of me? I was here for how long, and I can't get full-time, and guys just were just hired under my nose for full-time? That's kind of what that would be like. It's almost a slap in the face. It's almost like saying you're irrelevant, and we're only keeping you here because we don't want you to go somewhere else. So I think Ty Dillinger made the right call there. There's a very strong chance. Rikishi, I know, made a very odd Twitter post where he basically kind of said the Usos are gone. I don't know if he knows anything that we don't know. He very well could. He's their dad. But he was kind of saying, wherever you go, you know, you have nothing left to prove in the WWE, and wherever you go, you're going to be champions and that kind of thing. And, you know, all of a sudden we got Shane and The Miz rematch coming up here, and I'm thinking to myself, maybe the Usos are gone, Mike.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, that would be an odd surprise if they drop back to Shane and The Miz, you know. If they're going to be gone, and look, is there any wonder? I mean, I keep bringing up, well, where's Naomi and this whole thing with Asuka? Well, if they're going to be gone, if the Usos are going to be gone, well, why would you put Naomi in a match, in that high profile of a match, even though she might deserve it, if her husband's not going to be there, you know?
Yeah, well, what I'm thinking is, if they win, if Miz and Shane win at the Fastlane, that's probably a pretty good indication that the Usos are dying, and that would be the reason why they didn't push Naomi in the Elimination Chamber at all, and nor did they give her a shot at maybe Asuka. You know, the writing might be on the wall there. That's a big loss. Out of everyone so far that the WWE has either let go or people have requested their release or whatever, may jump to AEW to be the biggest. Because the Usos are world-renowned as one of the top tag teams. And over on, you know, SmackDown, they're just getting buried with the same matches over and over. Look what they're doing, for instance, with the club. I mean, when's the last time we saw Gallows and Anderson? They showed up for a couple of weeks when they said they were unhappy, and now nothing again. And it's just a vicious circle. It just keeps happening and happening and happening and happening. And wrestlers are getting tired of it. The WWE has too much talent, and they're hiring more. They don't even have enough airtime to properly use the talent they have. And they're bringing up more and hiring more. So if you're a guy who seldom gets on TV and you see this, what's your thought? Your thought is, well, I mean, this is going to cut my time down even more, and I have none. I think a lot of these guys would be okay even if they were used as enhancement talent. I think a Ty Dillinger might have said, well, I don't know, for the money you're giving me and stuff, if you just want me to go out there and drop matches for the next few years, maybe I'll do it. But to just say no, you're not doing anything. You know, that's terrible. Give them a role and let them know what your role is. And be honest about the role. And then they can make a decision for themselves. Your role in our company is your enhancement talent. You're there to make some other guys look good. When we bring up new guys, you're going to be one of the first or second people they fight. That kind of thing. Get yourself over with the crowd as much as you can. And hey, man, if you catch fire for some reason, you don't know. We may, you know, we may bring you up in the ranks, but right now that's your job. I mean, where's Tyler Breeze? What's all of these people that have been so wasted from NXT, and you're bringing more up to presumably do the same thing? That's what worries me. The track record of NXT call-ups have been terrible. Terrible. One out of every 8 or 10. And we just got 4 called up. So if it's 1 out of every 8, it's half out of every 4, which means that pretty much Ricochet, Ciampa or Gargano, or Black, one of them has a shot. That's not a good ratio if you're a fan of those guys. Anyway, folks, we will be back here on Sunday with another edition of WrestleChat Radio. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestle Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.